This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Chris.
It's good to see you, friend. You look well.
Thank you. I just slapped on a bunch of makeup and then looked down inside, made myself 4 minutes late.
So there was a little shape of your side view of your face made out of foundation on the pillowcase?
No, I actually waited all day to take a shower.
I noticed.
Sometimes I like to push it as an event.
Yeah.
Whether it's get up, you know, do some exercise, then shower, or just wait and hold off, let the creepy feeling build, and then take a shower in the evening.
Yeah, yeah. But if you don't, you lay down a towel on that pillow, right? Because you know what happens to the pillow with water.
Chris, I wash my face before I go to bed.
Well,
I don't know what you're...
Yeah, Karen, you know, I'm just saying... there are times, and I know that it's only water that I've left on myself. When I take off my pillowcases, there's a silhouette of my face, and it appears to be made of coffee.
I think you need to see a dermatologist.
Hey,
I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Before you start pointing fingers, go look at your pillows. My pillows are 15 years old, though.
That's the real problem here.
I'm just saying there are coffee stains on my pillow, and I rarely, if ever, bring coffee to bed. So I think it's just wet head.
Oh.
I'm drunk.
No.
Hey, it's not like that time where we stumbled on the NASA station, but I went golfing, and it was fun, and I was outside, and I was breathing in the soil, and I had some White Claws, and I maybe ate an edible that was stronger than I, but all it's going to make me do is try harder to enunciate, and I think we're going to be fine, but I'm drunk.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, maybe let me take the lead, and you can just relax this
Thank
time.
You. Thank you. That's you. That was my bait, and you bit it, you big old fish. Like a human.
Well, before we get into any more of your coffee, pillowcase, pillow talk, let's introduce our guest for today.
I think it's time.
I think it's high time, and it's very exciting. We've never had him on the show before. He is a young star comedian of today, beloved by many.
Very attractive.
And we're thrilled to have him here.
Very funny on Twitter.
Joel Kim Booster, ladies and gentlemen.
Joel Kim Booster.
Hello. I didn't know that this was the kind of podcast I could... I almost ate an edible as well before this, but out of respect, I said...
You held back.
I said no.
Right.
Do it now.
So,
Do it now and see what
the
end...
Yeah, and then it'll sort of be like a countdown clock.
Yes.
Before I actually... Because I'm not like Chris. I could not do this well enough, but I made myself a little nauseous with a snack, and I really wanted to feel less nauseous, so I almost ate an edible, but I didn't because I respect you so much.
I feel like podcasting, especially these days where we're all in this awkward mm-hmm. Zoom trap where it can only be as good as Zoom allows us yeah. to have it be, because we can't feel our actual timing or chemistry and
pheromones.
Right. And we can't smell each other's yeah. pheromones, which is so crucial in podcasting.
You know how excited I get.
Yeah, Chris goes.
With a smelly guest.
But I feel like substances could only help that yeah. situation, yeah. really. I don't know.
I don't think so for me, because I get so anxious when I get stoned and I try to do things like this. And I admire both of you so much, and I would be just so nervous the whole time trying to talk to you guys.
Thank you.
Well, now that we've talked about it a little bit, my paranoia is setting in. So if we could just, because lingering is that edible, and they are a fickle ingestible.
Chris, I'll just remind you, you're a talented comedian.
Thank you.
This is your podcast, so there's kind of no way to fuck up. And then if there is a way to fuck up, we'll just edit it out.
Yeah,
so
but do you think I am getting throat cancer?
Yes. I meant to tell you that, but that's just, don't worry about it anymore.
If we were there, we could smell you. We'd really be able to tell.
Cancer reeks.
Yeah.
The dogs that can tell that you're about to have a seizure or yeah. cancer, whatever.
Yeah.
Or and COVID now. They have dogs that can smell COVID.
Oh, no, really?
You're kidding mm-hmm. me. That was mm-hmm. on the news? You saw it?
Yeah.
So
I actually might be making that up.
I know. When you said it.
I swear I read it somewhere, but I can't be sure. Now you've really put the fear of God in
you
me.
Know
I'm
what?
Really not sure.
Everyone
it's
that
possible,
listens
though.
Googles a lot. We will find yes. out if you're right or not, but I think you are right.
People who listen to this podcast know it's on them to if they're
check.
Gonna yeah, if they're gonna take anything in or pretend to learn anything from this podcast, it's on them to really make sure that that's a truth, or if it's just kind of a truth in this universe.
Yeah. I hope people spread that around without checking, though. That's my favorite kind of fact. There's, you know what's something that I literally remember reading somewhere, and I have told it to so many people, but now I can't find the original source of this factoid that I love to spread around, and I'm worried that it's not true. It's that Ted Allen, the host of Chopped on the Food Network and mm-hmm. former Queer Eye, is married to his cousin.
Wow.
and I use this as, because I think and I'm starting early, but I think that gays should be allowed to do incest, lateral incest. I think, like, as a form of reparations for us, we should be able to do it, and it should be everyone should have to be cool with us marrying our cousins.
Yeah,
and I use Ted Allen as an example of that.
But by lateral incest, you mean age-wise? Like, we're going to keep
yeah,
it up in
the decent area?
I've
said this in the past, and people get mad at me, and they're like, you know, they immediately associate incest with father-son
sure.
or something like that. And when there's a power imbalance, obviously, no, I don't support
of course
it. But
not.
If it's just cousins
just relative stuff.
Yeah.
That's more a royal. That's more like you guys just being a little bit...
Yes.
You know, the house of blank, where
exactly.
you just got to keep the bloodlines rich and fancy.
Well, and that's the thing, though, is that's not a concern in our community about the bloodlines.
Right.
And
right,
so
right. You know,
there's really no all the negative connotations with cousin fucking is really not an issue in the gay community.
It really right. is frowned upon, isn't it? Except with animals, except with dog, the more purebred they are, which means the more inbred.
Yeah, but
they have breathing problems.
Most purebred, quote unquote, dogs look like they shouldn't exist. They
yes.
look like they're in pain constantly,
yes.
and I feel bad. The only
it's
good
like
dogs are mutts,
normal size but super short legs,
yeah,
or like yeah, the pushed in snout type
yeah.
of stuff, where you're like, this is only hurting the dog,
and
yeah.
costs $5,000 more.
My friend yeah. has a bulldog, and he had to get the dog an eye lift and a tummy tuck because
he lives in West Hollywood.
What's this?
Yeah, that and it, like, for the dog's own good, though, because like the dog was not able to really see because of the folds, and then like the stomach was something was wrong with the stomach. I actually don't know why he got the tummy tuck.
Yeah,
but the
yeah.
eye thing was a real serious issue.
While they were at it, did they make the dog more appealing? Like it
I mean,
ended up being cosmetic, right?
I will say the eye lift really did something for the dog.
Just six pack abs on a dog.
Speaking of the incest concept, it made me think of, did you get that idea? Perhaps. Could it be like you fell asleep during an episode of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, where the woman is married to her own grandfather?
Her step-grandfather.
Her step-grandfather.
You're kidding me. Is that a Mormon? It's okay?
And it was she's Pentecostal, actually. Oh. And her grandmother requested that he marry one of her granddaughters.
Mm-hmm. It is a step, but
yeah, that's a
pretty
leap. I'm gonna go ahead and call it a leap.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. and it's actually, you'd think it would be a bigger deal. It is a plot point on the show, but it isn't even really the main focus of the story of the show, and you'd think it would be, but it's
right.
not. It's
There's just, well, I can't say I watch it. I listen to a podcast where they talk about themselves watching it, which I love. So then I don't have to witness it. But apparently it's not even the weirdest thing on the show.
Not even a little bit.
I kind of respect that.
Yeah. There's a lot of weird shit going on in
Salt
Lake City.
So I need to start watching the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City?
I mean, I recommend everybody does dip their toe in that pond, but I understand that it's not for everybody. I've also become a worse, dumber person since the pandemic has started. I stopped reading and I only watch reality TV and I eat Subway 5 times a week.
Yeah,
so,
me too.
Which is, what they say, is it the tuna fish in Subway that's not real?
It's apparently not. And apparently there was a yoga mat. Like, they make their bread with like the same materials as people make yoga mats. And and still I am not deterred. And it makes me sick. It makes me sick to my stomach. But I also, like, I just literally today made a chicken smoothie. So
what?
Wait, do you have a broken jaw? I'm looking at you and I know you don't. But
did you get your jaw wired shut?
My friend got his jaw wired shut and his mom would put pizza in a blender.
Ew, now that's a step too far.
Hey, he's
I just cooked up some chicken on the stove and then put it in a blender with some water and blended it up and it's a little like soup.
Oh, was it just for convenience, like you were in a hurry?
Yeah, I am very conscious of what I eat to my own detriment, and I don't like eating anymore. I only eat Subway and chicken smoothies because I know like what is in it. Like, I know calorically and sort of on a macro level, like what the breakdown is at Subway and what with the chicken. And I just, it's so much quicker. I ate 60 grams of protein worth of chicken in 60 seconds.
Joel, are you
that's 1 gram of protein per second.
Are you becoming a bodybuilder?
I mean, I've been doing this for a couple of years now.
You're in
and
shape,
I am a fitness person. I'm one of those people.
I mean,
but
I dip my toe in that.
Yeah, I mean, you went golfing today.
I'm wearing
that's
a headband, for God's sake.
Yeah. Yeah, we can see. We can see how athletic you are.
I did not put this on for the podcast, by the way. I had it on, and now I'm seeing that I wear it, and I'm embarrassed and also wee paranoid. But do you ever, Joel?
I think it looks great.
I've said this before so many times, and friends have agreed. Do you ever wish there was just the what you have to go through to get food? I just want a pill sometimes that is a meal.
Oh, absolutely. If I could have a pill, I would do it. And if like Soylent was more like even more sort of calorically dense, I would drink Soylent. But Soylent is sort of useless to me. I literally hate eating. I don't like doing it. And I don't like doing it to the extent that I have to do it to look a certain way. It's torture. And during the pandemic, it's really like for who?
Right.
Wait, do you not have a sense of taste? I think you have the virus.
We gotta get a dog over to your apartment.
Yeah,
I eat whatever I want on Friday dinners and Saturday dinners, and that's it. And those meals I enjoy because I'll eat nachos and buffalo chicken salads.
Sure.
And
in a blender with some water.
No, not in a blender.
Always drinkable. Always drinkable.
And a kebab. Yeah.
Nachos. I mean, that's a real part. It's like you're having a little party for yourself. Yeah. That's fine.
Deserve it after eating Subway all week.
Well, yes. Well, I'm impressed that you blended. I mean, if you think about it, it's like making a soup or
I actually got the idea from watching Chopped, where famed cousin fucker Ted Allen as the host. Because they put things in the blender there all the time.
Who are some other famous cousin fuckers?
Ted Allen's the only one I know of, and other than the Royals, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Well, let's
No, there's other ones. I think, there's the Morgan Morgan Freeman is with his granddaughter.
Yeah.
Something like, something I think his granddaughter's friend or something in that realm. Like, he went to a prom, I want to say.
Yeah. He's just
that's true. He did not go to the prom.
I think he did.
He narrated that prom.
Yeah, he's a bad dance chaperone.
Yeah, it's tough. Oh,
Woody Allen,
Jerry Lee Lewis, or am I making that name up?
Jerry Lee Lewis. No, you're right.
He married a 14-year-old.
Yeah, and see, that's the kind of incest I don't support.
Sure, that set to music.
the biopics are made out of.
yeah, that always stuck out to me. Even when I was a kid, my dad told me that, and I was like, "That's super wrong, right?" And he's like, "Yes, quite." I'm like,
"Yeah, a lot of the stuff Jerry Lee Lewis did a lot of stuff wrong." There's a real good. Did you ever watch Mike Judge's Tales from the Tour Bus?
Oh, yeah. It's the best. If you haven't seen it, Joel, watch Tales from the Tour Bus.
It's fucking hilarious. And it's just basically the first season is all country stars and all how like his Mike Judge's whole thing is, you know, when I was a teenager in the 90s, it was all this rap stuff about how bad gangsters were and like they shouldn't be exposed to teenagers, blah blah blah, and he's like, and all I could think of was, does anybody know anything about country stars? And so he basically made a series where it's just they all were taking speed, they were constantly like
shooting each other
4 days, shooting each other, shooting other people in bars, like they didn't give a fuck.
And it's all animated, kind of like King of the Hill. And
it's great.
They're talking to all these roadies and guys that were on tour at the time. And they're like just these sweet old men. And they're animated. And it's so funny.
It's animated.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All
so
the
it's
reenactments.
It's easy to consume.
Yeah.
It's the blended chicken of TV.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wait.
Exactly.
I need to go back and ask you this question. When you have your Subway sandwich that you allow yourself with the yoga mat bread, which I remember reading that and being like, interesting, and still going and eating. Yeah. Same with when Taco Bell, there was an article that said it was sawdust.
Sawdust.
Meat was sawdust.
Do you remember that the ground beef at Taco Bell is apparently a part horse?
Yeah, it's grade F. I've seen the box.
Yeah. I was like, I don't care. Like, what
don't
is a
care.
Horse? How is a horse different from a cow? To
right.
me,
of course.
You know, if I'm going to be consistent,
right? Just slightly more beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, arguably.
So more majestic.
Subjective.
Spiritually. Yeah, there's a spiritual difference there, I guess.
Their hair makes them.
Yeah. I eat anything with a good spirit.
Yeah.
What is in the tuna then? They said it's not tuna, which means it's dolphin, or are they saying it's not even dolphin?
No.
They
I
said
can't
it
remember.
Was just like, that it's just not necessarily food. It's definitely not tuna or fish.
Sort of made in a lab vibes.
Oh, wow.
Just kind of. A filler, dog food style, cat food
Which
style filler.
Seems sort of more sustainable to me, I guess.
Like, I think it's going back to what Joel and I were talking about. They are manufacturing this food pill I want so bad.
Yeah.
Yes. They're just taking too long.
Yeah.
But you get your yoga mat sandwich bread toasted?
Yes, I do. I think it makes it more palatable.
Yes, me too.
Always.
Because you really sense the yoga mat when it's not toasted in a way that's unseemly.
The consistency is too familiar. When you bite down and it doesn't spring back, thing that it definitely does a lot.
Yeah.
When Subway in LA and maybe everywhere did that thing where suddenly they were open till like 3 a.m. or something. Do you know there's a bunch of them that are open,
that.
You know.
That would be a game changer for
me. That's like, what they did to recover from Jared,
Well, I was going to say, I'm sort of, I feel like the reverse Jared. I'm going there to gain weight. You know?
you're taking a different approach. Than
you should do commercials where you hold up a tiny little pair of dollhouse pants.
I can't fit into these anymore. Thanks, Subway. You've done it for me. But there was like so many jobs I had where like I would leave and it would be 10:30 and I would just be like, I can't eat fast food again. So Subway was this kind of in my mind. I was telling myself it was the good choice and it was open.
Well, I think it's better. It's better than most fast food, even though it's fake food a lot of the times, apparently. I do think it is better for you than your McDonald's.
There
was
a Men's Health article, and this was in the late 90s that I read. And there was a list of all the fast food that from best to worst. And I hate it's because of on a chemical level or whatever. Subway was down at the bottom, but I was a big Taco Bell kid, just as a kid. And that was up there like as, hey, there's not much wrong with Taco Bell. And this is after telling you about that great F beef thing. And
interesting.
Before you naysay, a Men's Health article. So, you know,
yeah,
there was some
That's
research.
Like the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah,
practically.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's big.
Yeah. It was
on
higher
a chemical
up on
level. Taco Bell is better than Subway,
and at the bottom, of course, McDonald's and Burger King for sugar reasons, but because they did indicate why. And I think
and preservatives, you can leave out a McDonald's burger for days,
right?
If not years,
yeah,
yeah.
But if you see what happens to mayonnaise overnight, you're gonna swear that off for life.
Wait, what was underneath Taco Bell? I mean, what other options are even
all things that made sense? I was surprised Taco Bell was up there. And the reason
Taco Bell wasn't number one, though.
No, it was not. But it was in the top 10. I do remember this list because I didn't know how to cook and I was a kid.
I imagine it's the kind of thing you think about every time you drive past one of those things.
Yes.
I would, not tonight,
number eight. Maybe number four. Let's see what happens.
I'm deciding that this article in Men's Health made the biggest impression on me in my entire life because I constantly remember that it's okay to go to Taco Bell. And there is preservatives in the bread at Subway. And it's a bread-based thing. The bread there isn't as good as they claim. That's all.
I'm not sure that they claim that many things.
They say Hello Fresh, and I think that they're talking about the bread there.
I will say, I was at the Subway today, and they had run out of bread. And the guy was like, mad that they didn't have any more white bread. And he was like, how do you not have any white bread? And she was like, well, we make it fresh in the store. And I was like, bitch,
don't try it.
You get a pallet yeah. of an unknown substance and you slab it on a tray and you put it in the oven. That does not mean you make it fresh in the store.
Yeah.
But this man was a nightmare because he also came into the store and said, I'm not sure what I want yet. And then he kept being like, how's the American Club? How's the Italian BMT? And it's like, don't torture these Subway employees like that. Yeah. They don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Well, they're also,
where do you think you are?
Do you want them to describe it to you? It's all subjective. What do you like in sandwiches?
That's why they're called an artist, because art is subjective.
It's very true. And these are sandwiches. You're not in some exotic foreign restaurant. You know what I mean? Have you had a salami sandwich before? Because it's going
to
taste like that.
To walk into a Subway and ask them, what's good here?
That's so funny.
May I speak to the chef?
You're right. Yeah. The bread probably in its form, it comes out of a caulking gun or something. And then it's baked to bread shape. And that's why they say. Subway eat fresh.
Eat fresh, right.
And it was always about the bread.
I bet you the bread it's baked in, it only can be baked in that oven. Like you couldn't steal it and take it home if you worked there because it probably doesn't bake in a real oven. It has to be in the oven that Subway has.
Yeah, yeah. It's like steel casket shaped exactly like a loaf of bread that they clamp down.
That it's like, this was made to bake yoga mats. So don't try. You can't just go taking this somewhere.
You can taste the downward dog.
What's your order at Subway before we get out of this area?
Either get a 12-inch turkey on white double turkey with provolone and veggies. Or I get, if I'm really feeling crazy and and feeling like I want to treat myself, I'll get an Italian BMT with turkey instead of ham. Double turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that nice. Sounds good. I stick with turkey there too.
Turkey is the best lunch meat for you.
I agree.
And it's also but it also tastes the worst, I think.
Yeah.
Like everything that's good for you.
Yeah.
Right.
It's
oh,
a
I
sacrifice.
Love turkey.
I eat it because they have the worst personality.
Worse than salamis.
I've been around turkeys. I've talked about this. They're assholes. I'm okay with eating them. And I know that's controversial.
Yeah.
No, I do think they are assholes. They're mean and they'll chase you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're dinosaurs. They have big scaly legs. They pinpoint that you're human. And then they move in for the attack. I don't like turkeys.
Guys, we're all turkey sandwich at Subway people. I think that's kind of
that
nice.
Is beautiful.
I think that's nice for us as brand new friends.
It really brings us together.
Do you feel differently about tuna now? You used to eat a lot of tuna when we'd have our little meetings at the 101 Cafe, rest in peace.
Do you? Cafe. I know, isn't that sad?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's the only place I actually don't like fish, and I don't really like tuna, but for some reason, their tuna salad was almost dry, if that makes sense. Like, they put so little mayonnaise in it that it didn't become some mayonnaise problem, which is what I can't deal with. Any kind of a blank salad is a real mayonnaise problem. I don't like it. And I would always say to the waitress, it was usually a waitress, I'd always say, can I get your tuna salad sandwich, but no mayonnaise on the bread? Because they would put extra mayonnaise on the bread on a tuna salad sandwich. Where I was just like, guys, let's think it through. So then when you would bite into the bread, tuna would pop up through the holes in the bread. And to me, that is the worst thing of all time.
I only recently came around to mayo. I had such an aversion to it because growing up, get this, my parents would get Miracle Whip and call it mayo.
Oh.
And they just think it's interchangeable. And mm-hmm. and I finally, as an adult, came around and finally got used to mayo. And I was like, this is not the same. And they're like, yes, it is. It's the same. And they gaslit me about Miracle Whip for years.
You grew up in the Midwest, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did it's you? Just everything that has the moniker of salad has Miracle Whip in it.
Yeah.
That's sweet, sweet mayonnaise. Well,
it's so sweet.
Yes.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
We were an anti-Miracle Whip family, so anytime I would go to a friend's house and their mom made sandwiches with Miracle Whip, it would totally be like, what are you eating?
Oh, yeah. There was people in my neighborhood I wasn't allowed to talk to.
Stay away from that family, Chris.
They're a Miracle Whip family.
Stay away. Miracle Whip or margarine is kind of a shocker when, like, if it's something.
And that's the other thing. They said margarine is the same as butter, and it's not.
No, you're. Wait, are you from, like, Kansas, like, directly in the center of
Illinois.
The country?
I'm from Illinois.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so sort of, but not
just a little
quite
above
the center.
A little bit
above. Yeah.
Did you start doing stand-up in Chicago then?
I did.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
I started
good.
In
that's
Chicago.
A great place to
yeah,
start.
I agree, because it is like, it's all the stage time of New York, but no one's paying attention. And so you can really
something
be bad.
About it makes my favorite comedians. I don't know how to pinpoint
there is
that,
an energy. I don't know exactly what it how to pinpoint it either, but it's just like, it's so cheap to get drunk there.
Mm-hmm.
And the stakes feel so low and everyone's just having fun. I would not say I got good. I don't know if I was a good comedian in Chicago. I think I only got really good in New York, but I miss my time in Chicago so much.
You moved to New York first then? Did you like start with Kyle Kinane and those guys or?
No. They are much older than me.
Yeah,
I guess I'm coming up on my 10-year anniversary of starting.
Nice.
So
wow, good job.
Which feels like a long time now, but I still feel like a baby compared to some people that I know who are doing this. But yeah, and I moved to New York. I moved to New York after like 2 years of doing stand-up. And people said it was too soon.
They always do that.
Yeah.
But this is the thing, is that I moved to New York with people who were several classes above me in Chicago who wouldn't even know my name. And we all had to start going to the same fucking open mics.
Yeah.
Nobody gives a shit what rooms you were doing in Chicago when you go to New York. And so we all started at the same level. And it just, you know, I had none of the ego, you know, it really bruised them because suddenly they couldn't go up first at the open mic. But I was like, well, I'm used to going last.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
this is fine. This is my life.
Yes. And I also, I bet that I had a very parallel experience where I lived in San, I started in Sacramento, but I was only there for like 6 months, moved to San Francisco, which was like the big, in my mind, the big time, but I only lived there for 2 years. And then I moved to LA and everyone said, it's too early. You have to come here and you have to blah, blah, blah. Well, it was all dudes that were telling me that.
Yeah.
And all these club owners in San Francisco had all these little mini fiefdoms and they did all this weird manipulative shit where every time I'd go, I'd be like, fuck this. Like it would be that weird, like they were kind of fucking with you or I don't know if I'm going to put you on tonight. And I'd just be like, it's not like I thought I was the best comic of all time. I just knew that was bullshit. Like that wasn't, their opinion didn't matter.
Yeah.
So when I moved to LA and then everyone moved to LA and the exact same thing happened where it was just a total reset. So the people that were like super legendary in San Francisco had to start over too. And it was kind of cool because then there was this kind of like, it almost felt like more of a creative commune vibe where everyone was just like, well, let's get our shit together and try to actually make a mark instead of, you know, like getting your perfect club set down exactly how you want it. Cause it doesn't, you had to kind of do more than that in LA, I think, which was cool.
Absolutely.
But in Chicago, I just wanted to share my theory about Chicago. Cause I think there's like the bar culture helps the comedy culture and it has such a true love for, surprisingly, I lived there for a very brief time, but because of Second City and because of like, you know, Steppenwolf, there is a true love of like the arts and performing and comedy specifically.
And the theater scene there too, I think feeds into that as well.
Yeah.
Like it has a really amazing storefront theater scene, which is what I originally went there to do. But yeah, I definitely think that
so
is
that the like creativity thing is in the air and there's, even though it acts like it's this, you know, blue collar, I'll beat the shit out of you kind of town, it actually has the heart of an artist. So like, you know, we would go to bar shows. There was a bar show we went to and it was people reading from the personal ads. I can't remember what it was specifically. It was so funny and enjoyable. And it was just like clearly a group that did comedy together that were like reading these things out of the paper. That was such a funny, great idea where I was like, oh, I see how like sketch groups just pop up in this town or like comedy packs, you know, packs of standups develop together.
That is like, it's so hard for, you know what? This is the thing too, I think about Chicago and New York that I do think that LA sometimes lacks in as much as in terms of per capita is that I do just think that there are a lot of people who are comedy nerds in both those cities who enjoy going to see stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And those people make up so much of the audiences of the shows. Whereas I do find in LA, and maybe it's just the shows that I'm doing, is that there's it's made up about half of those people and then half of people who want to be where you are at that moment. They want to, they're like either trying to do something adjacent to comedy or comedians or actors or influence, you know, like they're there for another reason. And it is a different energy than New York and Chicago and I'm sure even San Francisco to an extent.
Yeah,
I've
Austin,
only been to San Francisco
Austin
for big
was
things,
that
but.
Way. Yeah, I started in Austin. There was that same feeling of like there was this art community, such an appreciation for art in the nucleus of Texas, which is otherwise not what you think of when you think of art. And then the same pressure like to stay. But it was a vibey thing like, oh, I'm waiting for Hollywood to come to Texas and they would like try and talk me out of leaving. And I'm like, no, I think I want to experience different kinds of audiences. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so much good art there.
Yeah. I do get that. I mean, I haven't done stand up in a while, but that was my least favorite vibe. I was always looking for a fight in the audience when I did stand up. I was always like, look, I hate you. I'll figure out exactly how by the end of the set. But just know, I'm also not a fan of yours. Like the worst way to do stand up. But that vibe of I could be doing this better thing, it was always something I felt like I picked up on because I think I was in comedy before the internet and before the real big explosion, you know, that how it got super popular, where it, I did start with audiences that had no interest in doing comedy, and they were just like, I like comedy. And there was a line was so distinct. Whereas then moving to LA and slowly but surely, it was like kind of everyone could be a comedian. That was the vibe where it's like, or anyone could.
Anyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit like this in New York, but this is an experience that I've had so many times in LA that is so frustrating, is that like someone will come backstage and be like, so-and-so, the booker from Fallon is in the audience tonight, you know, like there's, oh, did you see there's a bunch of like agents, or there's this person from this network, or somebody is in the audience. And it's like, well, okay, I'm not going to try this weird new bit that I wanted to try. I'm going to do good bits now because I don't want to bomb in front of the fucking Fallon.
And that's what you should do. And I would always get confronted by that. And I'm like, well, then I'm just going to have fun and blow it and have a few drinks. And I'm going to make the wrong decisions and show them how loosey-goosey I am, and that doesn't work.
There was never anyone important in Chicago audiences. There was never once anyone important in a Chicago audience, and it was so freeing.
Yeah, right. Very true. That's kind of how San Francisco was a little bit, unless maybe Alice Walker came to a show one time. San Francisco doesn't have like celebrities like that. Their celebrities are all so like, you know, it's either Bobby McFerrin or, you know, the weirdest, like when Sharon Stone married that one rich guy, she lived there for a little while. But yeah, you couldn't really, that wasn't part of it.
Wait, Karen, you've met Bobby McFerrin? The singer of Don't Worry, Be Happy?
He lived in San Francisco for a long time.
I love that song.
It's a hit. It's an undeniable hit.
The weirdest celeb in a city that I know of is, did you ever do the Comedy Attic in Bloomington, Indiana?
Yeah, it's
one of my favorite clubs.
Yeah.
And Jesse Eisenberg lives there with his wife in Bloomington, Indiana, for some inexplicable reason. And he goes to all the shows at the Comedy Attic. So like Jesse Eisenberg was in the audience of my show, and I was like, why are you in Bloomington, Indiana?
That's great. The time I worked there multiple nights, the guy that made the movie Hoosiers, and then also this movie Breaking Away that I always liked with
the best
Daniel Stern and Dennis Quaid, he wrote those movies and he taught film at that school. And he was there every night, and he was telling us when Trump was running about, because he was like married to some model lady, he was talking about Trump trying to hit on his wife and get her alone and stuff. And early on, I'm like, well, he sounds like a bad guy. I hope he doesn't become our president. Like early on, but he was the nicest guy, and he just liked comedy. He hung out there. He was in the green room. With the other funny thing about that club is the guy that runs it, the green room is also his office. So while you're getting ready, looking at your notes before a show, and he's like, yeah, how many people are with your party? Okay. Like he's taking those calls in the green room.
It's funny because both Hoosiers and Breaking Away are two of my very favorite movies, but they're not that similar. So the idea that the same guy made them is blowing my mind.
And he was the best guy ever. He was super funny. And I had to start asking him questions before he's like, oh, I made some movies and now I teach film here. And I'm like, what were the movies? And then he told me, and me too. I love those two movies. Yeah.
They're so good.
Yeah.
Both of them.
Breaking Away is the best.
Never seen it.
You got to get into it.
You got
to
see it.
The next time you feel an urge to watch Reality
House basketball, right?
But it's a true story. So even if you don't care about basketball,
I love an inspirational sports movie. I can't get enough of an inspirational sports movie.
And also Gene Hackman is the coach and he's amazing. And then fucking Barbara Hershey before, when she still has real thin lips. And every outfit Barbara Hershey wears in this movie, because it's the 50s in Indiana, is the best out. Every time she walks on, she'll have like a moss green, you know, mock turtleneck short sleeve shirt sweater, and I'll just be like, where'd she get that? Or like a Pendleton plaid jacket in autumn colors, where I'm just like, this is the best movie. It's the best movie of all time. It's really good
for wardrobe alone. Watch it.
for Barb's outfits alone. But then the actual story, which is the true story of this little ragtag basketball team that made it to the top. They made it to the top.
Okay, no spoilers.
Oh, whoops,
please.
Sorry. Yeah.
I was going to watch it.
The In Hoosiers, they win Hoosiers at basketball.
I'm so sorry.
Now I'm going to fucking blow the top off Mighty Ducks for everybody.
Don't do it.
They win. The kids win. Well,
Hoosiers.
Okay. I feel bad for talking about that Mighty Ducks thing.
Yeah, you really killed the convo.
Yeah. I think it was just because, well, very drunk.
Oh, yeah.
I'm fine.
Like, just out of. So, what year did you move to Los Angeles?
I moved to LA in 2018.
Oh, recently.
Relatively. So, it hasn't been that long. Or was it 2017? No, it was 2018. It was 2018 for sure. It's weird because I've only known LA like in a very specific, like I didn't struggle. I haven't struggled in LA, you know, mm-hmm. like I came here to write on a show and I was already like a stand-up who was like touring pretty regularly and like felt comfortable there and like was able to live by myself here. Whereas in New York, every day was hell, you know, and like, and in Chicago too. I mean, my first apartment in Chicago was a studio apartment for $500. And I remember being like, I don't know if I can pay rent every month. Looking back on that now, that is like insane. But it was a real concern. And I like, a big reason I started doing comedy is because the only thing I could afford to consume as entertainment was podcasts. And so I would listen to comedy podcasts and like that really inspired me to start doing comedy.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
What'd you do for a day job in Chicago?
I worked for Groupon, and this was sort of the other prong of me starting comedy is I worked for Groupon for 4 years. Even when I lived, my first job in New York was also a company that Groupon bought. I just transferred there and was able to do that. And I worked in customer service. I started as a temp in the customer service department. I was like the 78th employee of Groupon.
Wow.
And then by the time I left to go move to New York, I was running 3 call centers in Ohio and Virginia.
Shit.
As like a 24-year-old.
Yeah.
And it's just an emblematic of how stupid the company was because like I had no business doing that. I had no qualifications. I was an operations manager and I like literally was bad. I was bad at the job.
You didn't have a passion for it? Or do you feel like if you had stayed, you would be like wealthy?
There were moments when I was in New York where I was like, I could live comfortably doing this because I was like good at the job that I was an account manager for this restaurant group in New York and like getting screamed at by restaurant managers I was extremely good at. And I remember like just like being like, well, maybe if all of this doesn't work out, like I could just work in startups for the rest of my life and be happy.
Right.
But I'm glad that I didn't do that.
Yeah.
Me too.
Me too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like you spend enough time and then you're just like, yeah, getting yelled at restaurant managers is this thing where you figure out the way to get through it. And then, which is like that. And I think that's what happens to people in jobs, but it's like, but is that your dream?
No.
Is that how you want to spend your days?
I also find that job really taught me that every single person who runs a restaurant is crazy. There is not a single there's just not anyone who is stable who's doing that job because how could you? It's a job where you work like 14 to 16 hour days and you're like, it doesn't pay super well. And like, you're just dealing with shit all the time. And yeah, they're all coke addicts or just nutso people.
Yeah. And it's always usually going to go out of business. I mean, isn't that the average is like they
constantly.
In 2 years, they all go out of business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now with COVID, everything is going to be a restaurant group. It's going to be like secretly, it's going to look like an independently owned business, but it's all going to be owned by the same people who own Olive Garden.
Yeah. I wonder how cocaine sales are right now.
Probably
my guy seems to be thriving.
yeah.
seems to be doing well during this time.
They're a resilient bunch. You know what I mean? They pivot. They know how to use their different talents.
Just because they're pacing around a room constantly.
They pivot to selling cigarettes along with their Coke.
Yeah.
Don't want to make two trips? Let me do this for you. You're going to need these?
The only difference is, I will say, is that my drug dealer now won't make deliveries. You have to come to him. He refuses to make outgoing calls. You have to go and visit him.
That's smart.
And that's the only difference in the COVID world of my drug use.
Yeah. I would like, does he have a little sneeze guard, like a plexiglass? What's his setup when you arrive?
No, it's just like in his
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
So we're going to
bleep out the name of the kind of the type of car just for safety reasons. Just for that no drug dealer visits you at night. Let's bleep out the name and the type.
And that makes for good podcasting. When you bleep something, they're like, ooh, like they're involved in some kind of espionage. So you drive to the car and meet him. You're like, I'm going to park here, come to me.
And then he throws it into your car window and you throw a lot of cash at him.
Yes. Actually, it's all done.
You know, it's crazy. It's all done through Venmo now, which feels sort of like we shouldn't be doing that. But it's all done through Venmo.
Do you just always put a picture of a slice of pizza underneath?
Yeah. Something like
$250 for some pizza.
I think I always do like the little like halo emoji. It's still a good person.
If you scroll through, sometimes I do. It's the weirdest wormhole to fall down. But just because I don't know why they're there, people's reports on their Venmo purchase, it's usually... Yeah. Halos and pizza. You're never getting the truth.
Whenever I see someone's like Venmo transaction and it's like tickets, I'm always like, that's drugs.
Yeah.
That's
drugs. All right.
Light
tickets?
Helper.
Tickets for what?
Tickets for the big concert? Yeah. I don't think so. I always look at that, and because everything I do on Venmo is private, because I feel self-conscious, where I'm like, how come nobody else feels self-conscious the way I do about how they spend their money?
Well, I will say there was a time when I was public because I was writing really funny Venmo captions.
Right.
For every time, I would pay my friends, I would write literal paragraphs, long Venmo, like as long until the character limit was reached, I would write it out. And it would be these long stories of like, how dare you come after my kids in the way that you did? I'm paying you back for the clothes that you say that they ruined. But this, and like, just go on and on and on. And I was really proud of
my
creative peak.
$35 for a belly button removal surgery? Like, just have belly button removal surgery, relocation.
I guess I look at that as I scroll through. I've never seen anyone like attempt a, you know, like the paragraphs.
Short story, yeah.
Most of the jokes are the same thing over and over. And that's so I kind of, I scroll through with extreme disdain for a lack of creativity and then extreme jealousy because it's like, no one buys me any burritos. At first I think I'm really like mad of like, stop trying to be funny. And then I'm like, you're just fucking jealous because look at all these people buying each other burritos all goddamn day long.
So you've been scrolling through. I didn't know that everyone did that. Of course they are because it's provided.
You know, it's weird. Venmo keeps being lumped in. I see like all of these, like we're all addicted to social media. And like I saw an image today, a meme, and it was all the social media sites logos on pills in a person's hand. And Venmo was included in that. And I was like, are we including Venmo as a social media addiction now?
Yeah.
I don't think I'm addicted to Venmo.
I'm just addicted to you giving me my money.
The most useful one, I would say.
Yeah, really. It's actually
how I pay my rent.
Yeah. You get in there, you get out. You don't have to do anything extra, but you can if you want. I think it's an interesting way to figure out if you feel like, and I feel like in quarantine, this is the kind of stuff we spend our time doing where it's like, oh, I see that so-and-so's bought so-and-so yet another burrito. I guess they're hooking up on the rig, but one of them's cheap and won't spring for both.
Yeah.
I like to write a little story.
Yeah.
They were using Venmo to dox people who are going to Puerto Vallarta.
Because
people were just like, putting like portafire like in the description.
Oh no.
Like vacation house and stuff.
Flying
like that.
In the face of quarantine. Yeah. And then a shape of Puerto Vallarta or whatever. That was that Carrie O'Donnell showed me that video of when the boat sank.
The boat sank, yeah.
God, that was, I'm sorry, that was funny.
I'm friends of a friend with someone who was on the boat.
Oh no.
And they were like, if you've got an hour and a half, I have a story to tell. And I was like, I will never have that much time for this story.
Can you make it a four-minute story?
I can almost guarantee you don't need that much time to tell the story. Because I know the ending. I know the good part of the story.
Yes. We saw the video of the good part of the story. Oh,
I don't
so
know
funny.
About the Puerto Vallarta story.
Well, can you sum it up? Joel,
yeah.
Chris.
What happened?
Basically, Puerto Vallarta is like a destination for gay and straight people right now during the pandemic because Mexico is very, very open. And so a lot of people were getting in trouble over New Year's because it was a big destination for New Year's. And specifically, there was like this gay account that was sort of like doxing and tattling on people who were down there via their social media posts, like would repost people's social media posts of being on vacation and be like, you know, shame them. And at one point during the New Year's weekend, a boat full of gay men capsized in Mexico.
And there's footage of it.
Okay. No one died, so it's fine to laugh.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And no one died at the Trump rally that was boat-based.
Yeah. Right.
It's fun to watch boats sink. That's all we're...
It really is. It really is.
We don't want anyone to get hurt, but a boat sinking is funny, and that's why I laughed through Titanic.
It's also funny to watch people panic in situations where you think, like the one clip that I remember, it was like somebody pulling somebody else up on the boat that didn't sink, or like a boat that came to help.
Yeah.
And the person was being so dramatic that was getting pulled up onto the boat, where it's just like, all right, you're just
Like, I'm pretty sure from the footage, they were pretty close to like the dock area. It wasn't like they were out in the middle of the ocean.
No,
like,
it was
a very easy swim back to shore.
Yes. And kind of gorgeous and luxurious, where it's like, isn't this what you went down there for? Why are you screaming? It's like, I know it's like jarring that a boat would sink, but you know how to swim.
I will say, I've been on so many cruises, and it's always a fear of mine that the boat will sink. It is always a fear of mine that the boat will sink. But I still go, and I love being on a boat. I love being on a cruise. Been on cruises. The cruise before last that I went on, I work a lot of gay cruises as a comedian.
Oh yeah. Yep.
And it's my agents hate it because it pays shit, but I love it because it just feels like a free vacation. And the one before last that I went on, the jail filled up on the boat.
There's a jail on the boat, and it filled up.
That's how crazy the boat was.
They had to start taking crew members out of their rooms
and using the crew members' rooms as overflow jail cells.
Do they ever say the phrase, "You're about to go to boat jail"?
I hope. One can only hope.
God, do we know what the average crime to get you in boat jail would be?
I think there was a lot of theft and a lot of domestic disputes and I can't imagine any of it was drug related because everyone was like I have a joke about it, but it is like I've never seen a community come together more heavily to just do one thing, which is smuggle drugs onto a boat.
Yeah.
You know?
We all
sure.
Like everybody from every walk of life, every age, every gender, every race just came together to do this one thing, which was to sneak our drugs onto the boat.
And so they're getting arrested
so beautiful.
For that.
Yeah. The last boat that I went on, they shut down the dock for a while because there was a bomb scare because one of the bomb sniffing dogs freaked out on, and of course it was because we came later to find that a lesbian was trying to bring a decommissioned landmine onto the boat as a prop for the military party that they have.
What? As a oh my god.
Because we come
that
to find, of course, the landmine bringing lesbian was there.
Yeah. That is hilarious. Well, that had to be an old dog to be like, hey, I know this smell. I was in WW2.
I know this smell.
So familiar.
Arsenic and old lace.
And the poor thing, they wouldn't let her on the boat after that, which I do understand, but at the same time, I'm so sad. I was like sad for her because I was like, she was just trying to be on theme. She was trying to bring her costume to the next level.
And bring the
probably
best
thought it would
prop.
Be hilarious.
That would have been the best like, prop.
This is going to, like, you can just picture how she imagined she was going to just destroy, like, you know, like win the party, basically, with the best prop.
And for the best prop with the most authentic history.
And then she's like in her house. Thank you.
I'm locked. You. I'm handcuffed to a radiator. That is insane.
It's awesome.
We went on
I like
a cruise.
Cruises.
My parents met on a cruise. My dad was a purser. Yes, on Princess Cruises. My dad was a purser and my mom was a nurse.
Oh my gosh.
My mom was engaged and my dad, he fell in love with her the second he saw her. So he would always try to hang out with her. And then he said, hey, come on, you have to go on this double date with me because my friend is going out with this girl and they're in Hong Kong, I believe it was. And he's like, you have to go with me.
Off just, the boat? Like,
off the boat. It was like they had the weekend off or the days off or whatever.
This and is they were, pretty romantic. I've never heard this story. I like, keep going.
It's my favorite.
Yeah.
So my mom used to tell the story. They go to this really fancy, because all the people were really well connected because they would just go on the same loop. The cruise would always be the same. So if they were going to, you know, whatever part of the world they were going to, they'd already been there 15 times. So they had connections and they were at this really beautiful, fancy restaurant in Hong Kong. And the guy that they were on the double date with, he was like super into this woman. And the woman he was with was a lunatic and she was shit-faced drunk, like from the beginning of the date. And so my mom wasn't friends with her, like didn't know her. So kind of didn't know what to do. And my mom said she was like a character out of like, she was just kind of a dippy girl that was kind of like this. And that halfway through the dinner, she passed out in her soup. She literally went, she was so drunk, she went face down in her soup bowl.
That happens in real life.
It happened.
That really
on
galvanizes
this
a relationship immediately. Because
my
big
parents
way.
Were like, they thought it was the funniest thing in the world. But my mom was also like, who are these people that you're friends with? Like, she just thought my dad hung out with total lunatics.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's the best.
So we went on for my mother's 60th birthday, we all went on a family cruise to Alaska because that was the one place she had never gone to. And I loved it because there was nothing I loved more because everyone on that cruise, my sister and I were the youngest by far than almost anyone on the cruise. There was a couple like grandchildren that were there with their grandparents. But other than that, everyone was like 65 or older. And my sister and I would go for the entertainment because I was like, I said to my sister, if there's a comedian, I can't watch it because it'll all just feel like I'm doing it and it'll hurt me so bad. Like I'll stress out. But they didn't have a comedian. They just had someone that hosted bingo. Like it was like bingo 3 to 4, bingo 4 to 5 or whatever. So we would just sit there and play bingo for as long as we possibly could.
God.
And it was my favorite thing. It was so relaxing.
I fucking love it. And I met there's a bunch of people. Apparently going on cruises is cheaper than hospice care. And so there are a bunch of people on these gay cruises that go cruise to cruise and are planning on dying on one of the cruises.
So would they like just sit in their chairs on the deck
and
like
that's how I want to go. If I'm gonna go, I want to go out on the water in fucking Nice.
Right.
You know?
Oh my God, that's insane. Don't wait till I'm cremated. I'll just dive off at the last moment. I'll sprinkle my own asses.
Just kind of get yourself to the edge and then throw yourself off.
Oh, that's insane.
Yeah.
There
that makes
is
a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah, every time I've been on a cruise, and I've been on like three of them, someone always dies. There's always some horrible, an elevator breakdown or a sewage problem. It's kind of scary being on. You're floating on a giant porta potty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of indefensible. It's an indefensible industry. It's It's awful. It really is not necessary in any way. And it is terrible for the environment. And I just can't get
it's
enough.
So fun. And you pull
you
up to
love
some,
it so much.
They park the boat right on top of a coral reef. And yeah. People that live in this town are forced to like, dance or give blankets. It's like so embarrassing. Every time I've done it, there's like, when you make these stops, it's so embarrassing to come off this cruise ship of a bunch of white people and you're in Jamaica and people are dancing and like trying to sell stuff. And I'm like, I had fun up until the stops. There's something about the stops that bothered me. Like, oh, we're going to let them walk around
white guilt.
For a couple hours.
The gay cruise company that I work for is Atlantis, and they have a sister company that does lesbian cruises. And you cannot make this up. But on the gay cruises, it's like party every night until 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. Like just absolute nuts, balls to the wall, ass out. On the lesbian cruises, it's much chiller, and instead of every port that they go to, there's volunteerism instead of tourism. And one of the stops was one of the volunteerism activity was catching stray cats to bring to a nonprofit to stay in New York.
You're kidding me.
I'm not kidding you. And it could not be more on the nose. It's like if I made that up, people would be like, be less, hack. That's like
they
lesbians running
cats?
After cats in a foreign country.
They put the cats on the boat. There's a room of cats.
No. It's in the city. Yeah.
They volunteer with the already.
With a nonprofit in the
they're
city.
They're taking cats from these villages and they're like, room 303 is open.
It would be so much better.
All night they're freaking out. You're like, it's going to be so much better when we get back. You'll see.
Everyone's covered in flea bites. Yeah, even in Mazatlan, it was like a stop on a cruise. They stopped and there was just these guys with machine guns lined up. And I was like, oh, let's not get off the boat.
Yeah.
Why does everyone have a machine gun? And then I walked past them into a neighborhood and it got increasingly more normal, a neighborhood they told me not to go down. And then I ended up, these kids were just finishing a mural and they were posing next to this mural. And then they called me over and I took a picture with all these kids in Mazatlan as if I helped paint the mural. But
typical white man stepping in at the 11th
hour.
No,
they were so sweet. And they're like, do you want to be in the picture with us? And I was like, yes, I do. Just to be in this photo.
I want some mural credit.
Yeah, I want to know what their version of this story is when they look at that photo now.
I promise you they were sweet. And I made them laugh and we enjoyed each other. And it was really a cool moment in my life. But I had to cross machine gun, a group of machine gun men to get to them. But I don't know. It's kind of cool.
Cruises are an eye-opener, I think, in that way. You know,
that and the shuffleboard.
You really do experience other cultures, other countries.
It is funny. One of the questions that they always gets asked on the gay cruise is like, what does the crew think of all of this? Because they're an international crew. And it's always, and they always give this preamble where it's like everyone on board who works on the ship knows what week it is and they're given an opportunity to opt out of this week. But most from what I've heard from working for the company is that a lot of people request to be on that week because we tip so much better than the normal weeks because it's all affluent, like mostly white gay men.
Asians.
And
who are having a great time, probably high on drugs, like, hey, spread the love a little bit.
Exactly
like,
that.
Yeah.
And so they eat it up. They love it.
As opposed to like grandma and grandpa who are complaining about every single fucking crab leg they come across and going like, I need a little more of this or that. Like, I'm sure. Yeah, yeah.
It's so funny that we're talking about
guy
this
with huge pupils
at the end here, because that is when cruises is, it's one of the things kind of like bowling where it's like, is that ever going to come back? A bunch of floating toilets.
Well, I'm on the schedule to do one in January of 2022. Time will tell if I'll still have that gig.
Yeah.
But I hope by January 2022 it'll be back.
Yeah, I think things will change rapidly soon. And yeah, you can keep that date from almost a year from now.
Yeah, it seemed like the cruise industry were the ones who let go last. Remember in the like the beginning of COVID, like in like April, where they're like, no, we're doing, there's another cruise going out, and then they had to immediately come back. Like,
And
those people were trapped on that cruise ship for a while.
Like
too.
In Long Beach, weren't they for like over a month or something? They were just living
something
on a boat.
Like that. Yeah.
That was back when there was no central government to handle anything that was happening. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yeah.
So recently?
Mm-hmm. It does feel like, I just remember like the halcyon days of the early pandemic when no one knew what was really going on and it felt like a snow day.
Yes.
And it just felt like, my good friend, we all make fun of him for this because it's just such a funny memory now, as I remember him saying on one of the first Zoom hangouts that we did was, and he went, I can't believe we're going to have to do this for 2 weeks. And now like every month or so on our group chain, we'll just text and be like, remember when Matt said, like, I can't believe we have to do this for 2 weeks.
Meanwhile, he's just in a room by himself, rocking back and forth. I hope Matt's really okay.
I know. Say hi to Matt for us. I feel bad, like, because honestly, at the beginning, when they were like, you know, it could be till summer, I was like, sounds fucking good to me. From day one, I was just like, this. Now, are you saying stay home, lay down on the couch, eat kind of whatever I want and watch TV? Yeah, this is what I have been doing. Exactly. Only I've been the bad one.
Only now.
For the last 5 years. Yeah, now I can do it with no guilt whatsoever.
Yeah, nothing is expected of me. Are you kidding me? There's no daunting voice on my shoulder telling me what I should be doing.
I literally, like, the week before lockdown started was like, I was going out almost every weekend, traveling to like tiny towns to do stand up. And I was so tired. Mm-hmm. And I just remember saying to someone, like, I just wish I could just stay home for a month and like not have to not have to travel and not have to work. And like, and then it happened and I was like, yes. And then it really was a monkey's paw sort of situation where I was like, I did this.
I did this to us. My manifestation has ruined it for everybody.
Well, we had our nice vacation. It was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah. And now we're podcasting over Zoom. You know, we really figured it out.
Look at our resilience of podcasters. And our adaptation. We can do anything. That was one of the first, Chris and I used to talk about this because you started doing stand-up on Zoom pretty soon. I did I waited and then did like a one of those shows where they play Quiplash. Like they actually play a game and you don't have to get set by yourself.
I can only do that. I can't do the stand-up show.
I'll do the drive-in. I did the improv drive-in show, which was, I thought it would just be people laying on the horn. I didn't know what to think. Plus, you're in Orange County, so I thought...
I did that one, too, and it was okay.
I loved it. I did not... because they were like, beep, beep, beep. They were honking, like, trying to mimic laughter. And it was, you know, 200 cars on the roof of this parking garage. And I very quickly was like, okay, this is an audience... Even if they're in a car right now and I can't hear them laughing, it was an audience and I felt so good. Greg Barrett was there too. And we were just like, it felt so good. And that's still riding on that high. It was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it was
when we
best.
Get out of quarantine, everything's going to be like that. We're going to go 7-Eleven and then it'll be just be like, I'm fucking high from, oh my God. Yeah. There was like 10 people in line. We all were talking. It was amazing.
I promise I'm going to talk to strangers in line. I'm not going to be rude to anyone.
That was one of, oh my God, before lockdown, when COVID was like a thing in the air, but no one was really taking it seriously in the States yet. I just remember like being like, one of my big bits was like, you know, it's one of these situations where like someone in line at the checkout's like, are you, there's a type of person that loves communal, like tragic events or like the earthquake person, the earthquake neighbor who's like, who desperately just wants to come and knock on your door and be like, did you feel it?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you feel it?
Like the gossipy, they're a gossipy neighbor.
And there's,
sure.
And there's always that person in the self-checkout at Target who's like, you can see has all the toilet paper and is like eyes darting around looking for somebody who they can talk to about this. And I remember like trying to write jokes about that person. And now I'm like, well, I was the fool. I was the fool, and that person was correct, actually. That person right. in the self-checkout line.
I think that is the joke right there. I still think that joke has legs.
Don't give up.
Don't give up. I just remember
walking into my local grocery store around that same time where it was pre-quarantine, post, we were really starting to hear about it. It's coming and, you know, whatever, but nothing official had happened. And walking down the toilet paper aisle and it was just like filled to the brim. And I reading something where it was just like maybe stock up. And then I was just like, come on, like eye roll, like ew, dramatic. And then truly like the next week it was empty. It's so insane.
Yeah. It was a weird thing I still don't understand why people thought toilet paper was, but I'm a bidet owner.
Same. I wasn't worried. I
don't care. I got, if anything, I'm more green. I got a bidet and a terry cloth washcloth.
I'm so European deep down. This is not going to affect me.
Well, I think we've this is a long one, but that was so fun.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
We really did.
Joel, you're the best. It was so fun talking. Flew by.
I have to say, like, this is the most fun I've had recording a podcast in a while. And I talk endlessly on my own podcast about how unfunny I feel doing my own podcast, and this has been the most fun.
Oh,
and,
thanks. That's the best compliment we could ever hear.
I have to say, I was really nervous because I feel out of it in the stand-up world. Like, I wasn't doing it so much before. And Chris and I used to just book people that we knew that we didn't feel like we were oppressing if we asked them to do our break.
Yeah.
So we've had the same people on this podcast like five times because we're just like, we know Jackie Cation will want to do it.
Yeah, it was always up to us.
We know this person will want to do it or whatever. And so the fact that we have a booker now, and then every time I had that feeling of like, what if they don't want to do it? What if this? So that was the nicest compliment you possibly could have given. Thank you.
And you were great. It was
delightful.
Really fun. Thank you for being here. Is there anything you want to plug coming up?
Yeah, I know what's your name?
You wrote
podcast?
On a show.
Yeah, my podcast is Urgent Care. It's a call and advice show. And we don't have guests anymore for the very reason that we also felt like we were oppressing people that we asked to do it. It's very difficult. We had to record a bunch of bonus episodes for Stitcher Premium. And we were like, and we had guests for that. And it was every time we had to book someone, we were like, oh, who won't be mad at us?
Yeah, for real. Such a favor.
But, Urgent Care. Check it out.
Well, thanks
nice
for being
to
on.
Talk to you.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.
You've
so
been
much.
Listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYNAR.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date. Terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
Mouth horn.
With Karen and Chris.